WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Happy Halloween. It's last night at 8 o'clock Central Time. It was the 80th anniversary of War of the Worlds. I had been building up to that on this show for several weeks. So without further ado, I'm gonna play what was the number one radio show in 1938. It was the Chase and Sandberg Hour on NBC. Edgar Bergman was a ventriloquist and had a puppet named Charlie McCarthy. They were on the air from the 17th of December 1937 to the 1st of July 1956. Baffled, I've spoke with this about with the neighborhood psychotherapist about how a radio audience could be intrigued by a ventriloquist. Perhaps it's because there was a live audience. But most of the hysteria regarding War of the Worlds was overplayed because most people tuned into this show. This is from what I can understand. And during the music portion, it's theorized that a lot of people turned over to CBS and caught the Mercury Theater on air in the middle of their War of the Worlds broadcast. So I'm going to do that. So it's a little bit of trick and a little bit of treat this morning. I'm going to start off with Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, and then in about 15 minutes into the show, I'm going to switch over to simulate channel changing, as would have happened on October 30th. 1938. This is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Thanks.
Of Chase and Sanborn Coffee, the superb blend you know is fresh, present the Chase and Sanborn Hour, and your host, Don Amici. This is Don Amici, rounding up the Chase and Sanborn gang and greeting you for all of them. A hearty hello from Nelson Eddy, Dorothy L'Amour, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, Robert Arm Brewster, and Judy Canova with Annie and Zeke. We hope that you'll enjoy our show and that throughout the week you'll remain our friends as well as friends of Chase and Sanborn.
Howdy, Mr. Amici.
Oh, hello, Judy. Is there anything I can do for you?
Say, you know, Mr. Amici, I've been looking at that little McCarthy fella for 4 weeks now, and I'll be dogged if I can figure him out.
Yeah, well, don't try it, Judy. We all have the same trouble.
It sure is mystifying how them words comes a-bouncing across his wooden tonsils, ain't it?
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah, and you know I keep a-thinking of what folks down in Unadilla'd do if they feed him.
Would they be amazed, Judy?
Amazed? Listen, Mr. Amici, did you ever see a tree walking? Like as not, they hang a sap bucket on to it.
No. Hey. What's going on here?
Oh, well, Charlie, Judy only meant
that. Yeah, I heard what she said. I heard.
Oh, shucks, Charlie. I was only complimenting you. Hmm. Why, you ain't got nothing against me, have you?
No, but I can very easily develop something.
Oh, now, listen here. Now, that's too bad, Charles M. You see, I was hoping that I and you could sort of kind of get together like, you know?
Uh-oh.
I sort of like you.
You do?
I sure do.
Bergen, get your gun.
Never mind, Charlie. I'm sure you'll feel better when you know that our guest tonight is one of our mutual friends, honoring us with a return visit, the lovely Madeline Carroll.
Oh, Madeline, da-da-da-dum-da-da.
Thanks, Charlie, but we'll let Nelson Eddy do the singing. And it's the rousing, rip-roaring Song of the Vagabonds from the Vagabond King.
Town, you lazy rabble of low degree.
You rabble of low degree.
You spare King Louis to keep his crown and save our city from Burgundy.
Our city from Burgundy.
You and I are good for nothing but to die. We can die for liberty. Will you serve a stranger and bow down to Burgundy? Sons of shame and sorrow, will you cheer tomorrow for the crown of Burgundy? Onward, onward, swords against the foe. Forward, forward, the lily banners go. Sons of France around us, break the chain that bound us, and away with Burgundy.
Sons of toil and danger, will you serve a stranger and bow down to Burgundy? Sons of shame and sorrow, will you cheer tomorrow for the crown of Burgundy?
A rough-and-ready man of Canada. A big, brawny French-Canadian logger. The kind of a fellow who skips nimbly from log to log as they float downstream to the mill. Sure-footedly, he prevents the dreaded jams, and yet he always seems to find time to wave with the girls on the shore. Nelson Eddy sings the Canadian logging song.
Down the rivage we float, the logs they make the grand boat. On the logs we leap and laugh as safe upon the logs as on the run. There's a rock, watch out, mon frere, you maybe get a big shipwreck there. The sun is shining on the shore, we see big salmon jump some more, some more. Down the rapids we hear them roar. Now may flag it on the shore, holla! See the logs, they make stampede like herds of cows and on to lead. With log and pole, we have to leap to coax them out from log jam deep. A log jam is so hard to coax as a crowd of tricky women folks. The river bends, we get a view of Petite de Ville, they be at home. We wave and they smile, we know, all right. We see them again at the dance tonight, hola, hola. To those black eyes, we promise to be true. We dance the whole night through. On the rivage we float, the log she make the grand boat. On the log we leap and laugh, as safe upon the logs as on the raft. Hola, 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 hola.
Oh, no, 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 no.
life.
A haunting we will go. Cha 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 cha. A haunting we will go.
Hey, Charlie, the word is hunting.
Well, not on Halloween, it ain't.
Say, what are you going to do tomorrow night, Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. Duck for apples, I guess. What else can a fellow do on a measly 75 cents a week?
All right. Charlie, I wish you wouldn't take advantage of every opportunity to mention the allowance I give you.
Oh?
No.
Why?
It's embarrassing.
Yeah. I'm ashamed of it too, Bergen.
All you think of is money. Pleasure can be derived in many other ways.
Name four.
Well, say, Ed Grant, you going to stage a Halloween party for Charlie tomorrow night?
I certainly am not, Don. Oh. I haven't forgotten Charlie's party last year when he ruined the furniture and the carpets.
Yeah, and broke windows, too.
Yes, yes.
Don't forget your broken windows.
Four broken windows.
Yeah, five.
Five?
Yeah. I broke one after you took inventory.
Oh.
What a party. Talk about laughs and the fun we had. Oh, gee, I remember it still.
I can assure you there will be no repetition of last year's riot.
No.
No. That experiment was much too expensive.
Oh, sure. No party this year?
No party.
Oh. Aren't you going to do anything for a little itsy-bitsy Charlie on this Halloween?
I don't know.
You don't know?
No. Oh, I may tell you a ghost story.
A ghost story?
Yes.
Do you think you can afford it?
Oh, no.
Say, Edgar, I like ghost stories. You know any good ones?
Well, I know one, Don.
Hey, you don't mind if I join you, do you, Edgar? I like to listen to ghost stories.
Well, not at all, Nelson.
Oh, Edgar, you going to tell a ghost story?
Yes.
I love them. They frighten me to death.
You better sit close to me, Dottie. Hold my hand.
Well, this isn't really a ghost story.
No?
No. It's an actual experience.
Oh, sure. They all start out that way.
A friend of mine by the name of Joe Franklin purchased an 8-room house in Hoosick Falls, which is a small town in upper New York.
How far is that?
How far is what?
Hoosick Falls.
What about it?
How far is it?
Well, from where?
Oh. Thank you anyway. I still don't think it's the right answer.
Well, anyway, my friend, he bought this old house.
Say, how many rooms did you say it had, Edgar?
8 rooms.
How charming. 8 rooms? 2-story?
No, it's a ghost story.
As a matter of fact, Dorothy, it was a 2-story house. But the upstairs quarters were never used because there was a rumor that they were haunted.
They were what?
I say, they were inhabited by ghosts.
Well, didn't Joe Hoosick know that before he bought the place?
The name is Joe Franklin, and the house is in Hoosick Falls.
Oh, I see. Well, you want to watch that, Edgar?
So,
say, Ed, did Joe Falls know that Hoosick was haunted?
Yeah. Don, the name is Franklin, and the house is in Hoosick Falls. It was an 8-story, 2-room house. What I mean is...
We got him, boys.
An 8-story, 2-room house, huh?
Yeah. What he means, it's an 8-house, 2-story room. No.
Did anybody live in it?
Yeah. Yeah, Hoosick lived downstairs. And he raised goats upstairs.
Now, wait a minute. Who lived in what?
Mr. Poughkeepsie. Lived in Schenectady. I don't know. What is this?
Well, I don't think you people want to hear this story at all. Of course, if you don't, we'll just say so that...
Now, Bergen, don't be sensitive now.
They at least give me the curse.
Of course, we want to hear the story, don't we, Don?
Why, sure we do. Have you heard it before, Charlie?
Yeah, I hear it every Halloween. He does it. He brings it out, yeah.
Is it a good story?
It's awful. But let's egg him on.
Yeah. Oh, come on, Edgar. Tell us the rest of the story. What was your friend's name?
Oh, well, let's forget his name, and let's forget he's my friend.
Oh, forgetting friends, huh? What's the matter? Did he write for money?
No. He did not write for money. Do you understand?
No,
he didn't.
Oh. Is him sore, Bergen?
No.
Oh, come on, Edgar. We'll behave. Tell us.
Very well. I shall make a final attempt, but I insist on absolute silence.
Yes, you've got to have it quiet now.
And stop whispering, please.
Yes. Excuse me. Is it all right if I breathe a little?
Oh, yeah. Now, this is a true story.
Uh-huh.
But if at any time you question the veracity of my statements, stop me.
We sure will.
This incident took place about 8 years ago, at which time I was considered quite a handsome young man.
Stop! All right. You can't sell us on that.
All right. Charlie, if you'll only keep quiet, you'll find that this story is very, very gripping.
Griping is the word.
Now, you keep quiet, Charlie. We want to hear this story.
Thank you, Don.
Okay, Edgar.
Oh, you. All right.
Two-faced and all right here.
Now, where was I?
You're right here.
Yes, I'm. Picture, if you can, an old house with the foundation settling, sagging roof, peeling wallpaper. Can you picture it?
Picture it? We live in it.
In this house, there had formerly lived an old miser. Of course, you know what a miser is.
Oh, sure, sure. A miser is a man who thinks 75 cents a month.
No. No, you don't.
That burns him up.
Now, this miser had lived and died in one of the upstairs bedrooms, and it was believed that his ghost haunted it.
The plot thickens.
And do you know, Charlie, I was the first person brave enough to spend a night in that bedroom.
Oh, sure, sure, sure.
Nothing happened until midnight.
Nothing ever does.
And then, out of the still of the night, I heard the old grandfather's clock in the hall strike the witching hour.
Bong! Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
Don, will you please stop?
Yeah, when you hear the next cuckoo, it'll be exactly Bergen.
Yeah. All right, enough of that.
Yeah. Fellas, will you stop interrupting? Gee, you're being very rude.
Oh, now, keep quiet,
you're very
Charlie.
Unfunny. And the least you can do...
All right, will you stop too, Charlie?
Oh, me?
Yes.
How is...
You're the worst one of all.
Is that so?
Yes. Gee. Shortly after midnight, I heard a peculiar noise, as if someone were tapping on the walls.
Oh,
all right.
I thought I saw something.
No. Tapping on the walls.
Yes, yes.
And I heard footsteps on the ceiling. I couldn't figure out what it was.
Maybe you had a snootful.
No.
I was only trying to help.
Well, please don't. All right. No. Then suddenly, the steps got closer and closer. And then, without warning, a horrible figure pounced upon me. Something tugged at my memory. Where had I seen that ghostly face before?
In a mirror?
No. That settles it.
That settles what?
I'm not going to finish this story.
Well, why not?
Well, I'm not going to make a fool of myself.
Oh, I don't know.
Yes, you're right. You're right. I have made a fool of myself.
Well, it certainly took you long enough to get wise.
A few years ago, a song about a couple of people who were very, very tired swept the country. Remember, Let's Put Out the Lights and Go to Sleep? Well, now another one has come along, and it looks like just as big a hit. It's by Hoagy Carmichael, and it's called, simply enough, Two Sleepy People. Dorothy L'Amour shows how it goes, and very nicely, too. Dorothy?
Look at you and look at me, just two wilted flowers. We should get a cuckoo clock for this house of ours. You got a cigarette? Oh, honey, no? Gee, it's getting kind of cold, too, isn't it? Here we are, out of cigarettes. Holding hands and yawning, look how late it gets. Two sleepy people by dawn's early light, and too much in love to say goodnight. Here we are, in a cozy chair, picking on a wishbone from the frigid air. Two sleepy people with nothing to say, and too much. much in love to break away. Do you remember the night we...
Monique Bouquet. Playing. Available. Yes. Playing.
We are bringing you an eyewitness account of what's happening on the Wilmoth Farm, Groversville, New Jersey. We now return you to Carl Phillips at Grover's Mill.
Ladies and gentlemen, here I am, back of a stone wall that adjoins Mr. Wilmoth's garden. From here, I get a sweep of the whole scene. I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see. More state police have arrived. They're drawing up a cordon in front of the pit. About 30 of them. No need to push the crowd back now. They're willing to keep their distance. The captain is conferring with someone. Can't quite see who. Oh, yes, I believe it's Professor Pearson. Yes, it is. Now they've parted, and the professor moves around one side, studying the object while the captain and two policemen advance with something in their hands. I can see it now. It's a white handkerchief tied to a pole. Flag of truce. Those creatures know what that means, what anything means. Wait a minute, something's happening. Humped shape is rising out of the pit. I can make out a small beam of light against the mirror. What's that? There's a jet of flame springing from the mirror and it leaps right at the advancing men. It strikes them head on. Lord, they're turning into flames. Out ahead, field caught up by the woods of fires. They're gas tanks, tanks of the automobiles spreading everywhere. Coming this way now, about 20 yards to my right.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to circumstances beyond our control, we are unable to continue the broadcast from Grover's Mill. Evidently, there's some difficulty with our field transmission. However, we will return to that point at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, we have a late bulletin from San Diego, California. Professor Indelkoffer, speaking at a dinner of the California Astronomical Society, expressed the opinion that the explosions on Mars are undoubtedly nothing more than severe volcanic disturbances on the surface of the planet. We continue now with our piano interlude.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've just been handed a message that came in from Grover's Mill by telephone. Just one moment, please. At least 40 people, including 6 state troopers, lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition. The next voice you hear will be that of Brigadier General Montgomery Smith, commander of the state militia at Trenton, New Jersey.
I have been requested by the governor of New Jersey to place the counties of Mercer and Middlesex as far west as Princeton and east to Jamesburg under martial law. No one will be permitted to enter this area except by special pass issued by state or military authorities. 4 companies of state militia are proceeding from Trenton to Grover's Mill and will aid in the evacuation of homes within the range of military operations. Thank you.
You have just been listening to General Montgomery Smith, commanding the state militia at Trenton. In the meantime, further details of the catastrophe at Grover's Mill are coming in. The strange creatures, after unleashing their deadly assault, crawled back in their pit and made no attempt to prevent the efforts of the firemen to recover the bodies and extinguish the fire. The combined fire departments of Mercer County are fighting the flames which menace the entire countryside. We have been unable to establish any contact with our mobile unit at Grover's Mill, but we hope to be able to return you there at the earliest possible moment. In the meantime, we take you to... Just one moment, please. Ladies and gentlemen, I have just been informed that we have finally established communication with an eyewitness of the tragedy. Professor Pearson has been located at a farmhouse near Grover's Mill, where he has established an emergency observation post. As a scientist, he will give you his explanation of the calamity. The next voice you hear will be that of Professor Pearson, brought to you by direct wire. Professor Pearson.
Are the creatures in the rocket cylinder at Grover's Mill? I can give you no authoritative information, either as to their nature, their origin, or their purposes here on Earth. Of their destructive instrument, I might venture some conjectural explanation. For want of a better term, I shall refer to the mysterious weapon as a heat ray. It's all too evident that these creatures have scientific knowledge far in advance of our own. It's my guess that in some way they are able to generate an intense heat in a chamber of practically absolute non-conductivity. This intense heat they project in a parallel beam against any object they choose by means of a polished parabolic mirror of unknown composition, much as the mirror of a lighthouse projects a beam of light. That is my conjecture of the origin of the heat ray.
Was a medley of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy on the Chase and Sandborg program that started off at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on NBC, the number one rated program, radio program in 1938. And then when some folks switched channels during the music program and caught the Mercury Theater on air in the midst of their news bulletins pertaining to the heat flashes on Mars and the slaughter at Grover's Mill. Again, Edgar Bergen was a ventriloquist and he had his wooden puppet Charlie. How they stayed on the air from 1937 to 1956 is beyond me. If you think about it, a ventriloquist on the radio. But that was 1938. Popular culture psychology was different then. So, I hope you enjoyed that recreation of a Saturday night in 1938. Coming up next, it's that time of year again. PSAs, donations, and I'm gonna play. We got something Halloween. Let's have this PSA first and figure out which one I want to play.
Here at WMFO, we like to ask the important questions, such as why Freeform? Well, it's been our tradition now for 45 years, and none of us here want to see that change anytime soon. Do you? If not, we need your help to keep WMFO freeform by contributing to our annual donations drive. Anytime before April 13th, go over to donate.wmfo.org to support us in reaching our $5,000 goal. You will even receive a unique thank you gift. To see more about what our DJs have to say about keeping WMFO freeform, visit facebook.com/WMFO Medford. That's facebook.com/WMFO Medford.
Second half of this program, I'm going to play an Edgar Allan Poe tale, The Telltale Heart. This was off of the show Inner Sanctum. The series aired from the 7th of January 1941 to the 5th of October 1952. This particular episode stars Boris Karloff. He was a regular on the first season, a regular actor on the first season. And he subsequently had recurring roles throughout its air time. This is Arthur. You're listening to The Grand Hour on WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Happy Halloween.
Inner Sanctum Mystery, brought to you by the makers of Trotter's Pills.
Good evening, friend. Let me welcome you once more to the Inner Sanctum. This is Raymond, your host. Come in, won't you, and sit down? No, no, I'm not being polite. I'd prefer you to sit, you see. Because within the next 5 minutes, you're going to be so weak in the knees that you won't be able to stand. Inner Sanctum Mysteries again has the pleasure of bringing you the famous star of radio, screen, and stage, now featured in the current Broadway success, Arsenic and Old Lace, Boris Karloff. This evening, Mr. Karloff appears in Robert Newman's dramatization of Edgar Allan Poe's famous story, The Telltale Heart, presented for your entertainment by the makers of Carter's Little Liver Pill, the best friend to your sunny disposition. And now our story. A story based on a tale by the greatest master of the macabre that ever lived, Edgar Allan Poe. The story of a man who could hear not only every sound on earth, but even things that don't exist. So, turn down the lights, call in a friend or neighbor to keep you company, and listen to Boris Karloff as Simon in A Telltale Heart. It's early evening. The sun is just setting behind a range of low hills. On top of the nearest hill is a huge rambling building surrounded by park-like grounds. A road winds from its gates down to the little village below. Down this road comes a man. He's tall, gaunt, his hair snow white. He's so busy with his thoughts that he doesn't see the small, dark man who sits by the roadside. But just as he is about to pass him...
Good evening.
Huh? Oh, why, good evening.
Nice evening, isn't it?
Nice? Why, it's the most wonderful, perfect evening I'll ever know this side of heaven.
You don't say.
You can't know what it's like to feel as if you've just risen from the dead. As if your tomb was opened. And you were told that you could return to the world that you knew and loved.
Can't I?
You can't. You see, my name is Simon. I was a musician. 2 years ago, I went stone deaf. Suddenly. Completely. Do you know what deafness means to a musician? It's like dying. Or worse, like dying and knowing that you're dead. Oh, I went to doctors, but they could do nothing for me. But finally, one of them sent me to see the doctor who has the place up on the hill here.
Dr. Adair?
Yes, Dr. Adair. He kept me with him for 6 months, and now... Now I'm going home again.
He cured you? You can hear?
Hear? Listen. Listen hard and tell me what you can hear right now.
Nothing very much. The wind. Cricket.
Cricket and the wind. Do you know what I can hear? I can hear the grass growing. The sap rising in the trees. I can hear the stars moving in their courses. I can hear things that no man ever heard before. Now, do you know why I said that this was the most wonderful evening that ever was?
Yes, Simon. But I knew why before. You see, I just left the place up on the hill myself.
You left there? You mean...
When I was taken there, I was blind.
Oh, your eyes, yes. I hadn't noticed before, but they are strange.
Shall we... walk on together? Simon? Just where did you plan to go?
Well, I've been thinking about that for weeks now. All the weeks when I couldn't leave my room. I must get used to being able to hear again. Gradually. From my window, I could see an old mill. Just this side of the village.
Yes, it's deep in the woods, deserted. There's moss on the water wheel. And the door hangs open by one hinge.
You mean that you can see it from here?
My eyes have become as good as your hearing. You thought of going there, living there?
For a while, until I was ready to return to the world. Oliver, why don't you come with me? Then when we are both ready, we can go back together to the world.
I could do that.
Think of what it's going to mean, how much we're going to be able to help people. You with your sight and I with my hearing.
Help them? Yes. Yes, of course. All right, Simon. We'll go to your old mill.
This way, Oliver. Up this path.
Wazzy!
What? Oh, someone's Wazzy. Coming.
The farmer. He seems to be looking for something.
Good evening. I'm looking for my cow. Have you seen her?
Well, what kind of a cow is she?
A brown and a white one with a crooked horn.
Wait. I hear her. She's grazing in a field on the other side of the woods.
Hear her? That's almost a mile from here.
I have good ears.
Good? You must have ears like a fox. But that field, that's the squire's. How did she get there?
You think someone took her? Who would?
Well, it's the squire's land, but he's the richest man around here. Why should he have taken my cow?
Wait a minute. Let me see. Yes. Yes, I do see someone with your cow. He's just leaving her.
You can see that? Right through the woods?
I have good eyes.
Who is it? What's he like? Is he tall, wearing a brown jacket?
Yes.
I knew it. It's the squire. He's trying to steal my cow. I'd better go get her. Thank you very much. Perhaps I'll see you both again.
Perhaps. We'll both be staying around here for a while there in the old mill.
Why did you tell him that, Oliver? Did you really see the squire taking his cow?
I saw what he wanted me to see.
What do you mean?
He hates the squire because the squire's rich and he's poor.
But what?
Never mind, Simon. Shall we go on to the mill?
Here we are. And it's just the way I knew it would be. Quiet, peaceful, no noises, just sound. And even those are dulled by the waterfall.
Yes, it's just the way I knew it would be, too. Dark, dank, the home of the rats and spiders. We'd be happy living here with them.
Happy with rats and spiders? Why?
Because they're like me. Rats see in the dark, and spiders spin webs.
I don't understand you, Oliver. Must you always see the worst, the most evil side of everything?
Always.
But why? Don't you love people? Don't you think that this is a good world?
A good world when I was blind for more than 2 years?
But whose fault was that?
What difference does that make? I was blind. And did anyone care that I was? No. Love people? I hate them.
But, Oliver, that's wrong. You've no right to hate anyone or anything.
What's that?
What? It sounds like wings, like... Yes, there it is, there. A swallow. Why, it's frightened, trying to get out. Why, it's beating itself against the wall and... Oh, poor thing, it hurt itself. Fallen to the ground. I'd better catch it.
Is it badly hurt?
No, I don't think so. Oh, just this one wing.
Let's see. Perhaps we can put a splint on it, heal it.
Do you think so? Here, Oliver. But be gentle. It's still terribly frightened.
I will. I will.
Oh, Oliver! What are you doing to that bird?
Doing...
Blood, you crushed the swallow, killed it.
Why, so I have.
You killed it deliberately.
You think so? I told you we all have some badness deep inside us. Even you. Here you are ready to believe the worst of me, that I'd wantonly crush a harmless little sparrow to death and... Simon.
What is it?
I don't know, but there's something in your face. Something that wasn't there before.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm going up to bed.
Simon! Simon, wait!
It wasn't he that was blind. It was I. Why, he's bad, evil, clean through. He's like one of the spiders he loves so much, lurking here and spinning cunning webs to catch innocent people in. And what he saw...
saw in my face just now. There was something there. Something that wasn't there before. Death. Why did this have to happen to me? I was so happy just a little while ago. I loved everyone, the whole world. And now... now I have to kill him.
And here I am, friend. Raymond, your host in the inner sanctum, who also loves everyone. So, Simon has decided he must murder his companion. Not because he wants to, but in order to keep him from spreading the hate and evil he seems to love. That's a charming idea. But if Oliver's eyes are as good as he says they are, good enough to see death in Simon's face, how will he be able to do it, Quite a problem, isn't it?
Well, Raymond, everyone has problems. It's the answer that counts.
It certainly does, Mr. Herlihy, in a mystery drama.
Yes, and in a domestic drama, too. If you don't believe it, listen to what Agnes Vale says to her husband at the dinner table.
Oh, Bob, you haven't said a word about the cake, and I baked it especially for your birthday.
After 30, no one wants to be reminded of birthdays.
Oh, that's silly. Besides, a person's only as old as they feel.
Well, if that was the case, I'd be about 60.
You mean 90. No one could save up the grouch you've got in only 60 years.
If you felt as irritable, low, and out of sorts as I have lately, you'd be grouchy, too.
Of course I would. Anybody would. So the thing to do is not to feel that way.
What can anyone do about it?
Very simple, my dear. Try Carter's Little Liver Pills.
Right. And when you don't feel good, try Carter's Little Liver Pills. They do the work of calomel, but have no calomel in them. For they are simple pills made of vegetable drugs. They wake up the flow of one of our most vital digestive juices. When this vital juice flows at the rate of 2 pints a day, it helps to digest our food and bring back the glorious feeling that goes with regularity. Then most folks feel like happy days are here again. But be sure you get the genuine Carter's Little Liver Pill. Well, friends, are you sorry I advised you to sit down before? I thought not. You still want me to go on with the story of the Telltale Heart? Very well. It's a little later that same evening, and Simon is sitting in the upper story of the old deserted mill, waiting, listening.
Sleep, Oliver, sleep. Aren't you ever going to sleep? Oh, I know you're lying down. I heard you getting undressed. I even heard the thread snap when you pulled that button off your shirt. But you're not asleep yet. I can tell by your breathing, the way your heart's beating. And that's what I must wait for. The time when you're really asleep. When you close those hawk eyes that can see even in the dark. That could read murder in my face when I didn't know it was there myself. Wait a minute. There. Now you're asleep. And now, I must go. Easy with the door. Careful. And even more careful going down the stairs. Shh. Don't creak like that. Suppose he wakes. No, he can't. He won't wake up. He can't. And even if he does. Here we are. Door to his room. How shall I do it? Those sacks he's using as a pillow. Shall I pull them out and held them over his face and smothered him? That's it, yes. And then I wouldn't have to touch him. I wouldn't.
Who's there? Who's there? There is someone there. I can see you. It's Simon.
Yes, it's Simon.
What do you want? What are you doing here? I know you've come to kill me.
Yes, Oliver. I've come to kill you.
Philip, you can't do that. You can't. You...
Yes, Oliver, I can. And I have to. Oh, please don't struggle like that. I'm stronger than you are. You can't get away from me. You can't. You can't. That noise. Hear it? Your heart beating, pounding, driving the blood through your veins. Beating more slowly now. Slower and fainter. Running down like a tired clock. And I'm not going to let you go until it's stopped. So don't struggle. Don't struggle, please. Just a few seconds more. I can hardly hear it now. Just a faint, throbbing murmur. And now, even that's gone. Yes, it stopped. And you're dead. Oliver, listen. I didn't want to do it. I didn't, but I had to. You were only interested in hurting people. That's why I had to do it. And that's why I'm not going to give myself up or confess that I killed you, because I can still help people. You understand, don't you? That's why I must get rid of your body, hide it somewhere. Oh, what am I to do with you? I know. I'll keep you here, tear up the floor and hide you underneath it. Yeah. Let's see now, this crowbar. And this one here, there. That should be big enough. And now, in you go. Goodbye, Oliver. Goodbye. Just put these boards back. Nail them down again with the same rusty nails. And it's done. Now I'll spread this dust over the cracks. No one will be able to tell what I've done. No, not even with your eyes. If you could still use them. What's that? A light. A lantern outside. Someone at the door. Maybe Christie's come back again.
Yes? Who is it?
It's Trent, the constable.
The constable? What do you want?
Oh, nothing much. Thought I'd drop in. Say hello.
Come in, Constable. Come right in.
Thanks. Great time of night to be visiting, but I heard there were strangers living out here, and I thought I might...
Why, of course, it's part of your job to investigate strangers, isn't it?
In a way. Not that you're a stranger, exactly.
What do you mean?
Well, you've been around here for some time, haven't you? Up at Dr. Adair's place in the hill, I mean?
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I just left there this afternoon.
Uh-huh. And your friend, where is he? Sleeping?
Friend? Why, there's no one here with me. I'm all alone.
But the doctor said... You mind if I look around?
No, of course not.
Not that I doubt your word or anything like that.
Oh, now, don't apologize, Constable. Go right ahead. Well, Constable?
There's certainly no sign of anyone else.
Well, I told you so.
Yes, you did. Well, I'll just sit down here for a minute. My pipe's going.
No, no, not there. Don't sit there.
Why not?
Because... Well, it was just that the floor looked a little rotten right there, and I was afraid that... Oh, I guess it's all right.
Sure. Strong enough to hold me, anyway.
Don't stand there if I catch you! Good heavens. What's that?
What's what?
That throbbing. That noise. Beating away like...
I don't hear any noise.
But you must, you... Those ears of mine. Sometimes they're too good. It's just your watch ticking.
Watch? I haven't got a watch on me.
You haven't? But then what? Oh, look, Constable, I could use a bit of exercise. Suppose I walk you back to the village.
Well, it's mighty nice of you. I'm glad to have your company. But there's no hurry, is there? Let's sit here for a while. And...
I don't want to sit. Constable, will you come now? Now, this minute, if you don't, I don't know what I'll do.
Hey, you have gotten yourself into a state. Is anything the matter?
Oh, no, no, of course not. It's just that I get nervous, restless, and you won't mind if I walk up and down right here, will you?
Sure. it'll make you feel any better, go ahead.
Thank you. This floor, it is noisy, isn't it? Noisy enough. Constable, this lever here, I've been wondering about it. What's it for, do you know?
Yes, I think it opens the sluice, starts the mill wheel turning.
It does? Then let's try it. See if it still works.
There. Yeah, it works all right. It's quite a racket, too.
Still not loud enough. Still. Constable, by heaven's sake, will you come now and leave here with me? If you don't,
Look, there's no need to get so excited.
I'm not excited. I'm perfectly calm and quiet. Will you come now right away?
But I told you.
I know what you're doing. Sitting there, pretending you haven't heard, making me stay here and listen to it, beating louder and louder and louder. All right, I confess. I killed him. His body is right underneath you, under the floor. I killed him. And that noise you hear is his heart. The beating of his telltale heart.
Hello, Dr. Adair.
Oh, Constable, hello. Well, did you find them?
Yes, Doctor. I'm glad. Some of my boys will be bringing the other one, Oliver, along in a little while.
Bringing him? Is it matter with him?
Well, sort of. They were in the old mill by the river. Simon had evidently tried to kill Oliver, but he hadn't done a good job of it. He nailed him up underneath the floor. And when we got him out, he was unconscious. He's still pretty weak.
I see, Ed. Bring Simon in, will you?
Sure. All right, Simon. In here.
Yes, Constable.
Now, turn him around so that he's facing me. That's it. Well, hello, Simon.
Hello, Doctor.
Simon, why did you run away from here this afternoon?
Run away? I didn't run away. I left. What need was there for me to stay when I was cured?
And what you did, or rather tried to do, to Oliver?
That was wrong. I know it was wrong, but I had to do it. He was bad, Doctor, bad. He hated everyone, wanted to hurt them, and I couldn't let him.
You know, it's strange, Constable. Two men, both mental cases because of a sudden affliction. But while Oliver's blindness made him hate, Simon's deafness filled him with love for all mankind.
Deafness? You mean he's deaf? But when you talk to him, he answers you.
Yes, he reads lips. That's why I had you turn him around, so he was facing me. But he's stone deaf. He will never hear again.
What's that you're saying? Deaf? But I'm not deaf. Why, there's no one can hear better than I. No one. I heard everything when I left here. Things no man has ever heard before. The song of the swan. The breathing of the fish. Why, I even heard the beating of Oliver's heart. After I'd killed him.
Yes, Simon, of course.
I'm not deaf, I tell you. I'm not. I'm not.
So, Simon did hear all the things he said he did. Even the beating of the telltale heart. And not with his ears, but with something else deep inside his poor, sick brain. Speaking of telltale hearts, I'm sorry, it's not hard at all. It's just Mr. Herlihy's knees knocking together.
And if you think you're kidding, Raymond, you're crazy.
Oh, I'm not kidding, Ed. And Mr. Carlisle's audiences, that's the equivalent of applause. Since everyone's generally much too scared to show the usual approval with their hands. So we won't take any chances. We'll just use words and say, thanks, Boris Karloff, for your splendid performance of tonight's dramatization of Poe's The Telltale Heart.
It was a pleasure, Raymond, to be able to bring our friends one of the world's most famous stories. And I'm very grateful to Everett Sloan as Oliver and Santos Ortiaga, who played Christie.
was The Telltale Heart, the program Inner Sanctum. The original air date for that particular broadcast was the 3rd of August, 1941. That was kind of an interesting treatment of it, to say the least. It's always good to hear Mr. Karloff. I believe Marco is up next, but I haven't seen any rustling about the studio. This is Arthur, and you're listening to The Grand Hour here on Halloween 2018. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go ahead and close the show off with one that never gets old.
My monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east, to the master bedroom where the vampires feast. The ghouls all came from their humble abodes to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, "Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's actually right here, Drac.
Boris, here it is.
Hear what is?
The Transylvania twist.
All right, let's hear it.